This is another way of looking at the interaction between genes and environment. So everybody here has a complement of genes, some of which make you more susceptible to obesity and some of which actually protect you. So they're not all bad. Some of your genes will be protective. Different people will have a different balance of protective versus susceptible. So some people will have a greater proportion of protective genes, a smaller number of susceptible genes. Others will be at higher risk because their genes are not so great. But then they can choose to live a high-risk lifestyle or a healthy lifestyle. So if you were to have a lot of protective genes and you live a very healthy lifestyle, you're doing exactly the right thing because you will swing this pendulum towards health. If, on the other hand, you're born with a lot of susceptible genes and you have a high-risk lifestyle, you will push this pendulum towards disease. But, of course, most people have a combination of both. So you might have quite a large complement of protective genes but live a high-risk lifestyle, and then where you end up depends on the balance between the two. So the problem with this model is that we still don't understand very much about these genes at all. We've identified a few genes which are linked with obesity, but we don't understand them very well. And that's why you see newspaper articles where people claim that an obesity gene has been discovered. But they always follow almost the same line. And this is what they usually say. They say that researchers have discovered a commonly occurring gene that may explain why some people become overweight while others do not. However, they point out that it's unlikely to be the cause of the global obesity epidemic. You always see that sentence at the end of the article. And that is because that one gene can't account for obesity by itself. The way that these researchers will have done their studies is they will take a very large population, they will take blood samples from all of those people and find out whether they've got the good or the bad form of that gene. They will then measure the BMI of those people and they'll see whether the BMI of the people with the bad gene is higher on average than the BMI of the people with the good gene. So what they're doing is they're associating BMI with the presence or absence of a good or bad gene. But that doesn't show you cause, does it? It's just an association. It's just showing that that the people that carry that gene tend to have a higher BMI. So it cannot possibly show you a cause. And this is the point of susceptibility genes, that every time somebody discovers one, it's interesting, but it doesn't tell you that gene, how important that gene is in terms of obesity in general. Now, the most excitement occurred when the gene for leptin was discovered. And I'm going to focus on this as a special example of a gene that is associated with obesity. It was discovered in 1994, 1995, and it was discovered in a mutant strain of mice. They're called the obese mice or the ob-ob mice. These mice had a mutation in the leptin gene. And they were very obese, they had type 2 diabetes, they had hyperphagia, which means they couldn't stop eating. And they had very reduced physical activity, which is probably not surprising when you see how fat they were. Those mice could not produce any leptin because they had a mutation in their leptin gene, so they had no leptin at all, and they became huge and could not stop eating. And you can see why that caused so much excitement, because leptin is made by your body fat. It's made in human beings as well as mice, and it's made in response to eating. It's a hormone, and it controls food intake because it makes you feel full. It circulates in your blood, and it signals to the brain. So it's a hormone that is produced when you eat food, it enters the blood, and it tells your brain that you're full, and so you can stop eating. Now, when those mutant mice, who couldn't make any leptin themselves, were injected with leptin, they stopped eating within 30 minutes and they didn't eat again for 6.5 hours. So leptin in those mice was really important. And it's interesting to see that the name leptin comes from the Greek word leptos, which means thin.